I'm not trying to get an offer before
I'm not the moderator.
No, I know, but where's the speaker we talking to?
Yeah, that's fine.
Is there a speaker we talking to, or are we just going by voice?
No, there's not really an order. I mean, you can just introduce them.
Okay.
And
are you ready?
Yeah, let's
wait for...
Do you want me to put this back in?
Yeah, I could end it there, but I mean, we're not going to use it for the first panel anyhow. We're still waiting for another more to get them. They may be having trouble finding the building, but we're going to go ahead and get started with the introduction. Then Vinita's going to say a little bit about the mental health and the elements. She'll just let you just say a little bit about Layla Blinken and the neighborhood services. You can mention neighborhood the server and some of the other things that neighborhood services are going to try and do with technology. And today we're really trying to have more informal discussion, so you can keep your remarks as long or as brief as you'd like. All we have time cards just to make sure that we don't go over 10 minutes with remarks. We're going to try to keep this informal and hopefully get the discussion going.
Okay, you got it. Okay.
The schedule for a total of 45.
We have the whole. We actually discussed this for about an hour and 15 minutes. But I mean, based on how it worked yesterday, there was a lot of comments and questions from the audience. So there'll be a lot of hopefully audience participation after some introductions about what you think the major things do.
Okay. You know, I didn't ask you that once already.
I don't know. He's gonna tell me when he gets started. I thought we wait till people, because I think they have to walk from over there to the parking lot by St. Luke and walk over there.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I'll leave this with you because this is our agency and how we use it a lot. You know, we got the time center. We don't have it hooked up to time, but for our clients over here, we do use technology.
Okay. All right, you ready to go?
Yeah, anytime. I just want to make sure that everybody gets one of these.
Okay.
That's the UC to B material.
Okay. You ready?
If you want, you can scoot down by them. We have some people who have been. It's up to you.
I got to slip out of here.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
So,
that's fine.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'll probably sit here then to start.
Okay,
to fill in a little bit.
So I can slip out because I got to.
All right, can I have everyone's attention, please? All right, we're gonna try to get started here today. This is the second day of the eBlack Champaign-Urbana Campus Community Symposium. And today we're really trying to focus on what are some of the different things that the different agencies in town are doing with technology, whether they be churches, schools, community groups, community media, social services, government. We're really trying to get some conversation going on what are some of the different things that the different groups in town are already doing with technology, and through that discussion, make some connections that we can see what's going to be the next stage in the digital life of Champaign-Urbana. So I'm going to introduce for just a few more remarks about this Professor Abdul Kalimat of African American Studies in the Graduate School of Library and Information Science. who's going to just say a few more remarks about the importance of this event in the context of the Urbana-Champaign Big Broadband, and he's on the policy committee.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Before we start, life has many, many aspects to it, including birth and death. And today, not only is one of the participants and a colleague at the university having a funeral for his mother's passing, there's also a funeral across the street. So I'd like to just ask everybody to stand and have a moment of silence in meditation on the loss of William Patterson's mother.
Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you. You're multitasking, but we have to stop and give some respect every time we gather. First of all, on behalf of the Eat Black CU project and all of the sponsoring organizations, I'd like to welcome you to come to this second day of our symposium. We've been working on the question of technology for a long time in this city. A university has been the source of great innovation and things that we use that we don't even know came from right here. For example, somebody was talking about surfing on the web and what kind of browser they were using. And Mosaic comes out of here, which begins the whole new stage of history. Then somebody said they use PayPal. And people don't know that's a graduate student project out of the University of Illinois. And the only point of mentioning those things is to prepare us for the future innovations that some of these very young people that are sitting in the audience are likely to come up with. But their innovation is only going to be in response to a need. And their perception of the need might not be as acute as it would be if the community was in dialogue, because innovation meets needs. And we don't know what the next killer application is going to be on the web or using broadband. But we do know that those killer apps are coming. And we've had our share of creating those apps here in this town, and we fully expect that to continue. And in light of that, I want to bring everyone's attention to the manifesto, what we're calling a manifesto, on the second page of the program. Does everybody have a program for today? Who needs a program? I think it's very important to follow the program because then you can have the names and organizational references of the people who are speaking. And there isn't a lot of room, but you could use it to take a few notes anyway on the margins. I just like to read this manifesto because we're trying to get everybody on this same page. In the bottom of the second column, as we dedicate ourselves to become difference makers. An information revolution is underway, leading global transformation in health, education, business, culture, and in the diverse activities of our daily lives. This revolution cannot and will not bypass any underserved or low-income community. Every person and every neighborhood is impacted and therefore challenged to act. We rely on cyber democracy, collective intelligence, and information freedom. Cyber democracy means universal access, every person and every community organization able to make full use of new technologies. Collective intelligence means hearing all voices, all of us uploading as well as downloading information. And information freedom means online information is findable, costs nothing, and requires no special permission to access. With these values, we will work together so all our communities and community organizations can communicate, represent themselves online, and use digital technology to create cyber power for social change. We are hoping that this general language is language we can all agree with and be on the same page, so that as this new technology unfolds, as the new capacity is made possible, the people in the community are ready to take it up. In other words, we've got less than a year to prepare to take full advantage of UC2B. And once we take full advantage of it within that year, then that will spread throughout the community. And what we don't want to have happen is for the community, the target community of the initial rollout of UC2B, to sleep the opportunity and then to trail behind people who take it up as it expands to the rest of the city. We have an opportunity to not only serve our community, but to give leadership to the entire city, and that's what we're here to do. As you can see, the panels are to discuss the ways in which various agencies and constituencies in the city are thinking about taking up new applications because of this new technology. As a result of that, we want to have everyone in the audience prepared to ask questions, to interrogate the people who are here, and to interrogate the people who represent UC2B. Because there are people here who represent UC2B. I just want to recognize a couple of two, three people who are here. Mike Smeltzer, if you raise your hand, he's one of the principal authors and designers of UC2B, not just in the last year or so, he's been working on it for 15 or 20 years. So he's a self-defined grandfather of this whole project. Then there's Fred Hallinar and Richard Schur, who are both on the policy committee and officials in the Champaign City government. And I, too, am on the policy committee. And there's Chris Hamm, who's on the technical committee. And in the back, there's Connie, who's also on the technical committee. There may be somebody else I'm not seeing right now. In any case, the point is that today is a day to begin the dialogue of the community and UC2B and plotting the future. I look forward to a very exciting day. Thank you very much.
My name is Benita Rollins Gay. I'm representing, and I wasn't on the program because I had told him I had a funeral, so excuse me if I leave early, but I am representing Community Elements that used to be Champaign County Mental Health. And I left material over there on the table to tell you about all the different programs that we serve in the community and also crisis line cards. But before I tell you about what we do that use technology, I want to introduce our distinguished guests and panel. Just hold your hand up so they can recognize. Sue Gray with United Way of Champaign County. John Rosca, Land of Lincoln, Legal Assistance Fund. Kevin Jackson, Neighborhood Services, City of Champaign. And Will Cowles, City Council. Is Jennifer Allen present? Okay. So I will begin, and then we'll start from here with Mr. Jackson after I get through. First of all, I would like to let you know it is very important because we work with a very at-risk community at Community Elements. So our agency in general maintains a website that we use that we can go on, our employees can go. We now do e-education, which comes up and pops up early to tell you got classes to take on safety, on ethics. Every month we're doing something. Blood pathogens, sexual harassment, all of that. So now it used to be we had a hard copy. Now you have to get on the computer and test. In our clinical and related services, everything we do now, we used to do documentation manually. Now it is done electronically. So we have to do a service ticket, and we've also supplied computers for our case managers, so while they're with the client at the client's home, they can actually use their computer to complete their service ticket and move on to the next client. The other part of it is that we also have certain reports, grant writing, and other information that we have to do. My job is, I do the PR for the agency, but also I am the coordinator for the crisis line and crisis. And one of the things that I use it for is we connect with Carl Hospital, the university, Carl Hospital, University of Illinois, and all the police departments. I actually do a training with the police department. It is hard for all the police. We're talking about Sheriff, U of I Police, Urbana Police, Champaign, and Rantoul. It's hard for them to come out. So they come for the initial training, and we've developed a website that we use so that they can tell me how many hours, because they cover the crisis line, because that's helping them develop people skills. They are mostly hostage negotiation team members who want to know if this is the same person that they will go out and meet. So they communicate to me through the website. I have a lot of psychology students and some community members that are crisis line. So once the training, we give them news. There's a newsletter on different subjects like PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is an up-and-coming psychotic disorder that we have to be ready to deal with. So I'm constantly educating them on the newsletter. It lists all of our websites, our email addresses, so they can click if they have any question about a crisis. All they have to do is email us. It's a way, especially for the students, they do not like to come out of their little community. So once they're trained, you don't see them. I've offered pizza, you know, let's have a volunteer appreciation. That doesn't get it. But now this website, I hear from them all the time. And then some of them ask me, are you doing, do you do Facebook too? I said, well, you know, I haven't got there quite yet. But, I mean, everything is with technology. Also, I noticed with the students, they don't like you to call them. They don't hear the ringtone. They won't. If you text them, you get them right away. So I had to get ready with that because, you know, I was from the old school. So the texting, the technology is so important. We do our program plans and proposals, human services, when there are job openings. I even add that to the website because, believe it or not, most of our staff are our crisis line volunteers who graduate from college and then come to us and end up working. Our CEO, who is Sheila Ferguson, was a crisis line volunteer. So it's very important, that training, and most of it is done. Eventually, I guess I'll have the training on a website. So that's how important technology is to us. I see this working because Time Center has a very at-risk population. That's our transitional housing for homeless men. A lot of these men are coming out of the penitentiaries, don't have anywhere to go. A lot of them have just gotten off a bus, been dropped off. They use it. They're looking for jobs. They're looking for just information about the community, resources. So that's a place that we need to work on to try to implement more technology for them. So now, if you have any further questions, you can ask at the end. I would like to introduce Mr. Jackson so that you can talk about what you do for the city.
Okay, all right. So I'll start off with a few things. I'll talk a little bit about kind of what I do for the city, but I think, you know, what we're really trying to articulate here is kind of what our perspective is on the use of technology in the business that we do. So I've been the Neighborhood Services Director since March of 2008 at Transplant here from Phoenix, Arizona. You know, on a basic level, on a day-to-day basis, you know, as a Neighborhood Services Director, I oversee the administration of services that benefit people in Champaign in need within neighborhoods throughout the city. We provide an array of housing assistance programs and services via the opportunity we get through our federal grants from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And then we also administer the code enforcement program for the city to promote property maintenance of privately existing, privately owned property, residential and commercial, primarily residential. And then the third section in my area is working with neighborhoods, promoting civic participation, and working with neighborhoods to do that. Work with neighborhood groups, neighborhood associations, neighborhood watch groups, and so forth and so on, homeowners associations. And these are people who actually are organized and they are registered with the city to partner with the city on maintaining the health and wellness of their particular neighborhoods, but also trying to revitalize their neighborhoods in some instances where there are a lot of needs in their areas concerning things that are not going so well. So that's sort of a basic synopsis of the services that are under my watch in the Neighborhood Services Department for the City of Champaign. But let's talk a little bit about this this issue of the use of technology. I think, you know, there are a lot of people, members of the panel, people in the audience that will join me in having this in common with me, that the idea that in today's times, particularly the public official, you have to try to find inventive and new ways of doing more with less. And particularly in the neighborhood business, when you're trying to revitalize communities, there's never enough resources and funding to do all the things that you would like to do. And so, and there's always a competition for funding. You never have enough staff and capacity to do all the things you would like to do. So technology, the use of technology to promote more efficiency, to promote more innovation and opportunities to get things done that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do, is very attractive to me. So, and it has been since I've been in this neighborhood business for the last 10 years in a couple different cities. So technology is very interesting to me. I think the use of technology, particularly as it advances, it has practical applications in just, you know, the routine day-to-day business environment, but also for promoting things like we all are interested in, been interested in for a long time, collaboration. Collaboration to make a difference, working together as organizations according to a common interest to make a difference in the community. So, you know, we come together in meetings. We've been doing this traditionally. The tradition is you come together in meetings, you join, you go to symposiums, you go to workshops and so forth. There are all these different ways to collaborate. But, you know, the movement even in the private sector is that there are now more online, electronic ways to promote greater collaboration. And so I'm looking at ways that, you know, our department in the city can take advantage of the opportunity to promote greater collaboration to address community needs. And so there are a couple projects that we have underway that have not been very public that I'm going to be promoting very soon, probably within the next year, and I'll talk a little bit about those. So that's sort of, you know, public participation, the use of technology can enhance things like public participation, which we're all interested in, particularly as public officials, collaboration, and this idea of collective intelligence. You know, the city has a philosophy of advancing the idea of promoting healthy neighborhoods by looking at the physical aspects of neighborhoods and collecting and documenting statistical information to identify needs throughout the city in order to develop how their perspective on how it's going to provide its programs and services to respond to those needs. So this system was established back in the early 90s, providing a baseline of kind of what the conditions were in the city at that particular point in time. And the whole idea was that you would establish this baseline of information and you would track it over time and you could monitor neighborhood change. And then you could direct your programs and resources and services at the needs as they present themselves over time, as they change. So the city is interested in things like, you know, the physical aspects of neighborhoods, public infrastructure, public facilities, housing and property maintenance, public safety, and then finally, citizen participation and civic participation to define this concept of a healthy neighborhood. So if you have a healthy neighborhood in the city, then you know, you have to consider from the city's perspective, how is the infrastructure, what is the access to public facilities, quality public facilities, how is public safety in your neighborhood, and how active are the people in those neighborhoods, and are they connected to the people within the neighborhood, and are they connected to the city and participating in their city government and partnering with their city government. And that last one, civic participation, I happen to think is probably sort of one of the most prominent or important things about this whole idea of promoting community health. And the city recognizes this too. That's why it's in that sort of constellation of indicators of what defines neighborhood health. Because how do you go and improve a neighborhood without connecting to the people and trying to understand what it is that they desire? So you can do a factual and data analysis and compile information on the sort of standard definitions of what public infrastructure, healthy public infrastructure is, healthy public facilities, and so forth and so on. But then what about the preferences of the people in the neighborhood? And this is why this whole neighborhood wellness concept in the city of Champaign is so good, at least in my view. And one of the things I think that brought, one of the outstanding things that attracted me to come here from Phoenix, Arizona, to work in this particular city, in addition to the fact that we're in here doing stuff like this and the opportunities to partner with the university and other agencies that are active in this community. So I'm giving you this background that sort of defines the task environment of my work on a day-to-day basis, and then I'm hoping to connect this to the idea of the use of technology and the importance of these concepts of collective intelligence and promoting mass collaboration, hopefully also to generate innovative ideas that can be practically implemented to benefit people on a day-to-day basis. And that's my perspective even on the UC2B stuff. You know, how does big broadband have practical application for the benefit of people that it intends to serve? So when you look at this idea of neighborhood health and the programs and services that we provide and the resources that we have provided, you know, I'll start with my code enforcement unit, right? There was a time where we didn't have a case management system that compiled information on the inspections that we did on properties throughout the city. Everything was compiled on paper. Now, probably for the last 8 years, we've had all this information compiled into a computer system so we can track it more efficiently. Well, you know, we have 4 or 5 inspectors that cover the entire city to look at, to respond to complaints and proactively address issues in the community related to the deterioration of housing stock or, you know, deteriorated property areas. That's not a lot of people based upon the demand that we have for this service. And everybody's interested in this service because everybody wants to live in a good neighborhood that's physically appealing. Well, one of the things that we're thinking about doing, instead of adding bodies right away, is taking a critical look at how efficient we can be with the people we have. And one of the new technologies out there that a lot of communities experiment with is providing their inspectors with some type of mobile technology where they can actually update their records out in the field while they're conducting inspections, okay? So that's not what's traditionally done, but that does reduce a lot of time commitment to the service of doing inspections and, you know, provides greater opportunity to respond faster without having to increase the city budget so much to add people to do the work. So digital technology, you know, it has a practical application in our department, and I think it's obviously a practical application for the citizens of Champaign who are investing in this service and depending on us to provide this service to the community. One of the things that I'm really excited about, I got 2 more things if you guys can bear with me a little bit. Are we okay?
You okay.
Okay, good. This idea of neighborhood wellness, those indicators that I just described, there's been this movement in the country about democratizing information on community and neighborhood health. There's this consortium of communities that have, it's called the Neighborhood Indicators Project. And I started some work back on this probably about 5 years ago in the city of Glendale, where we built this neighborhood indicator system, and the intent was to identify any key indicators to measure neighborhood health so that we can effectively respond to the needs of the community. But we realized when we were building the system that we wanted that information to be available to people in the public so that they understood what the conditions were in their community on a small area basis. So we carved the city up into planning areas. Back there, it was census tracts. Here in Champaign, we have planning areas. And we looked at those identified indicators in those particular areas throughout the city. So but a big part of the project was democratizing this information, because a lot of time when there's not factual information about community needs, you have, you know, the gamut of public opinions about what is healthy and what is not healthy, what's a horrible neighborhood versus, you know, a bad neighborhood, a good neighborhood, and a healthy neighborhood. And so if we could define that, put some factual information out there to the public, then they have a greater chance of participating in the public process in a meaningful way to initiate change, or just to have a better understanding about what's going on in their community. And so when they come and talk to their public officials, they have some factual information to go by in addition to whatever preferences they develop based upon that factual information that they want to advance. So that was that. 5 years ago, I began that work, and you know, the city of New York, Charlotte, North Carolina has a nice partnership with the University of North Carolina on their Neighborhood Indicators Project and this whole idea of community wellness. So, you know, looking at Champaign, who I think, as I did my research on this, was sort of, I think, one of the originators of the concept of measuring neighborhood health. I was like, wow, I love the concept of what they're doing there and defining those indicators to collect statistics to measure change and to promote change. And so, but they started in 1991 or 92 when there wasn't this digital revolution. So the process of putting this information together, I'm gonna conclude, I'm coming to a head, was more arduous. But now we have this revolution of digital technology where we do have a digital technology plan, and we do plan to put that information out on the web about all this information that we're collecting about the community that we use to guide our decision-making process in the city. So you can look forward to us advancing that digital wellness concept and putting this information out on the website for people to view, and hopefully encourage more participation. Finally, I want to talk about, because I'm running out of time, and I'm so excited about the concepts here that are being discussed and addressed with this collective intelligence and innovation with digital technology, is we have a project right now. I work with probably about 100 different neighborhood groups throughout the city. And this is a way for the city to partner with the community to address issues in common with neighborhoods in the city in a constructive way. So we have a program to do that, to encourage public participation, people to organize in a group, define their interests, and work with the city to address those issues. So these neighborhood groups that I work with on an ongoing basis, we have this relationship with them in the city, and we work with them, and we communicate with them via meetings and so forth and so on. So we have this project underway now where we are, you know, we have an affectionate name for it called neighborsofchampaign.com, where we're trying to promote further, greater connection between residents within a neighborhood who are organized and participating with each other, where they'd be able to sign up for a listserv or a portal that we would host at the city. And they could establish this group, and then they could have sort of they could communicate with each other. But more importantly, the city can actually, any city department can communicate any information to these neighborhoods that might be of interest to them based upon them subscribing to the system. And I'm gonna get ready to close. I'm giving you an abbreviated sort of description of that, but it's a lot more massive than what I'm describing. And actually, I got a meeting set up, and I'm inviting some folks from the community that have an interest in digital technology and how it can promote public participation, innovation, and collaboration. And so I think Noah, I've asked you to participate in that, and some others, some of the folks from our neighborhood groups. And so you'll hear more about this, but I wish I would have probably spent more time talking about this one than some of the others, but there's just a lot of opportunity with to do the things that we've been doing for a long time, to do them faster, to do them better, to do them more collectively through the use of digital technology. And that's why I'm so excited about the UC2B project, so long as we stay focused on the practical application of it and the meaning, how it means something to addressing issues in the community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. I'm sure you all have questions, and we'll leave time at the end for questions. The next person is John Roska, am I saying your name
yes.
correctly? Who is with the Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance Fund.
Yeah, my name's John Roska. I'm a staff lawyer at Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance here in Champaign. I've been with Land of Lincoln since 1983 and in Champaign since 1987. I guess I want to take the opportunity to thank Noah for putting this together and inviting me and having me participate with the panel. It's a good opportunity to connect with the community. At Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance, we provide free legal assistance for low-income people in civil cases. We're not like the public defender that does criminal cases. We represent people in civil cases. We have 8 attorneys in our office, and we cover generally a 12-county area. Most of our cases are in Champaign County, Vermilion, but we go down to Coles County and Moultrie County and Piatt and other counties up north to Fort County. The civil cases that we do are mostly many family cases, divorces, orders of protection for victims of domestic violence. I do housing and consumer cases, which mean I represent people in landlord-tenant disputes and mortgage foreclosure cases, and I represent a lot of people in debt collection cases or problems that they've had with lenders or bad cars that they've purchased or general consumer type of problems. Our office is located at 302 North 1st Street in Champaign, down the street from the police station. We moved there a couple of years ago on the 1st Street neighborhood. My directing attorney is Valerie McWilliams, and she's very engaged in the community. She really loves participating in the community. Some of the projects that she's developed, we have the community garden that's across the street from Land of Lincoln office, and she was instrumental in developing the North 1st Street Market that was for the last 2 summers on North 1st Street. I guess in connection with the landlord-tenant cases that I do, I want to take the chance to thank and recognize what a great job Kevin and his office does in code enforcement. I was telling him before that the job that they do in Champaign provides a stark contrast between my experience in Danville. That in Danville, there is a code enforcement, there's a city inspector, but you call him up, and I've never seen him actually write out a written inspection report. Whereas I know if I have my clients call the city in Champaign, they will come out immediately, they will do an inspection, there will be a written report, the landlord will have 30 days to do something. And simply because, now I know other tenant advocates may criticize the city for not doing enough and not being aggressive enough, but the fact that the city does what they do is demonstrated by the fact if you drive down the street in Danville, you don't have to go far to see neighborhoods with derelict, damaged properties, but you have to really try hard in Champaign and Urbana to find some place that is what you see all over the place in Danville. So anyhow, I just want to say what a great job I think that the neighborhood services are doing. Other projects that we do, besides representing people in court and going to court, we're lawyers. We have 8 lawyers in our office. We do some community education at Land of Lincoln. We have, with the new facility there, we have a couple of training rooms, one large training room that we try to have events in. I know recently there have been classes in starting your own business that have been going on through this, in connection with the city, lenders and other groups in the community. They've been meeting once a week in the evenings in our board in the conference room about how to start your own business. I know that last week there was a session just to have people, there were different lenders or different representatives of different banks in the area that came in and met with people just to pull their credit reports, go over their credit reports, and explain their credit report to them and try to help people try to clean up their credit report. So there's every week there's some kind of event that's going on at Lana Lincoln in the evening. And in the past we hosted the tax preparation in the at the beginning of the year. Valerie is very big in trying to get engaged in the community. When I was thinking about technology and what we do, I guess I came to the conclusion that Lana Lincoln is probably not doing enough. We have a website, I guess that everybody has a website, but it's not terribly active. But Legal Services in Illinois, the larger program, has a great website, illinoislegalaid.org, or it's illinoislegalaidonline.org. It's a great collection of materials for the general public. Even though they have a website that's designed for lawyers, I use the general public website more than anything because it's so useful in terms of providing information. Now, we will be moving to do more with technology simply as the result of, necessity. I guess it's like Kevin said, technology really, the increased use of technology or reliance on technology is really the result of having to do more with less. 35 years ago, Lana Lincoln had 12 or 15 offices covering all of Southern Illinois. We had offices here, we had offices in Danville, we had offices in Decatur, Effingham, Mattoon. We had offices all over the place. But now we only have 5 offices covering all 65 counties, southern 65 counties of Illinois. And we simply can't be physically present in all those counties. I wish we could, because my personal opinion is that at least in the practice of law, face-to-face, real person interaction is essential. But unfortunately, the reality is we can't just do that. I can't be in Danville every day. I can't be in Mattoon every day. So the lower level technology that we moved to about 15 years ago is that we do all our intake through a central telephone. To get your case into Lana Lincoln, you have to call our Legal Advice and Referral Center, which is an 800 number, or actually an 877 number. And there's a panel of lawyers who are physically located in East St. Louis who are available from 9:30 to 1:30 every day. And they take calls, they do the intake, they screen to decide whether it needs to be referred to a lawyer. If they think it's something that a lawyer needs to look at, then they'll refer it to us. So personally, I hated that when they adopted it, but I guess I've gotten used to always having the phone answered by an answering machine instead of a real person, so I guess that's less of a barrier. But I personally don't like putting up barriers between us and the public, because I think some people just don't. The least amount of barrier will keep people away. But that's one example of technology. Land of Lincoln has a website, but to be honest, it's not that it's not as complete as it should be. That's going to be changing now, again, as the result of necessity. One of the projects that I supervised and developed at Lana Lincoln is the self-representation help desk at the Champaign County Courthouse, which is open Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. On Mondays and Wednesdays, it's basically from 9 to 4. On Fridays, it's from 9 to noon. And it is staffed by a retired lawyer who is there to meet with whatever walks through the door to try to help people with their legal problems. Now, they don't provide legal assistance or advice, but they do provide legal information. What the self-representation help desk tries to do is connect people up with forms or information that they can use so that they can handle their situation on their own. Now, a lot of the people, since it's at the courthouse, are there because they have a court case. And the bread and butter of what the self-representation desk does is simple, common, routine things like a simple divorce, defending yourself in a foreclosure case, or landlord-tenant case, suing in small claims court, collecting child support, changing child support, things that people can do on their own with the right set of forms. And at the self-rep desk, we've developed specific forms for Champaign County with what I think are really good instructions. I found in developing the self-rep desk that there's lots of websites out there with legal information and legal forms, but it's really rare to find the combination of good forms with good instructions. Now, forms without instructions don't do you any good, because I've had tons of people come into the self-representation desk who got forms online and haven't the slightest idea of what to do with them. And I don't blame them, because there's no instructions telling them what to do with these forms. So at the self-representation desk, we have good forms, good instructions specifically designed to deal with the situation in Champaign County. Now, unfortunately, the county is pulling the plug on the self-representation desk. As of December 1st, because of budget cuts, it's going to be closing. And so what we're going to have to do as a result of necessity is to move that online. Mm-hmm. Now, some of it can go online. I mean, all of it can go online. But there are limitations, I think, to what can be done, at least with our client population. Because as the woman who ran the self desk before me said, most of the people that come into the self-representation desk don't really want to do it themselves. They want somebody to do it for them. Some people can, some people can't. But that will be moving online, and that's an example of something that Land of Lincoln will be doing with technology.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roscoe. I just want to take a brief minute. That orange pad that's going around, it's for community elements, because when I come out and do presentations, I got to take it back to who I presented to let them know I'm all over Champaign County. So I appreciate if you just sign and print your name. The information is not used. It's for our benefit, because I'm trying to touch everyone, even with the technology, no matter what. So that's why that clipboard is going around. So I'm just asking you to sign that. Okay, thank you very much again. Now we have Sue Gray, who is with the United Way, and thank you for coming.
Hi, yes, I am Sue Gray. I'm the Vice President of Community Impact with United Way of Champaign County. And we are one of several local funders for nonprofits in Champaign County. Community Elements is one. And my friend Janice Mitchell in the audience, I'm so happy to see her smiling face out there today. And I say I have the best job at United Way because I get to help spend the money, which I like to do. But we do base that spending, that allocation of dollars based on community need, which is done through research and assessment. And what's been a beautiful thing is that we do have technology that makes finding data and information that we need about issues in the community literally at our fingertips. However, there's a lot of work still to be done, and being able to utilize technology to do that kind of assessment is something that we really want to do a better job at, because there is just voluminous amounts of data and information as it relates to human care services in Champaign County, in the state of Illinois, and across the country. And so we want to do a very good job at making sure we find the best data and research so that we can make informed decisions about how to spend our donor dollars. United Way does have its own website, and it is used primarily, I think, as an information tool for the community. People can actually donate online. We use it for not as much as we could, and for our partners, the agencies and programs that we fund. And as I see other United Ways across the country putting more and more of their information on their websites for their partner agencies to access, things like resources that they can use, how they can apply for funds, all of those things are being done online. But I think I'm a little old school. I really like the personal touch. I do like to pick up the phone and call and talk to agency directors or meet them for a cup of coffee and talk about what's going on in their particular area or their realm of work that they do. And so I hope that, my hope is that technology doesn't take us away from that personal touch. I think that's really important to establish relationships with people because I think you can serve them much better, and sometimes digital can be a little impersonal. Most nonprofits in the community, if not all, utilize a database of some sort to keep client information, donor information, that sort of thing. And many of our smaller nonprofits really struggle with that because it's time consuming. And to be able to allocate a staff person's time to do that, the entry, the maintenance of that database, whatever it is, takes them away from the actual client time. And that, and in the world of nonprofits, there's just lots of paperwork. United Way just recently did a community survey, and we had face-to-face interviews with over 120 people in the community, asking what they thought were the greatest needs here in Champaign County and the kinds of issues that they felt we were facing. And from the service providers, when we interviewed people who were service providers, one of the things that they talked about was a single point of entry into a system of care where once a family says, I need help, and say they go to Community Elements because they're under duress or stress, I mean, every single place you go, it's fill out this piece of paper, mm-hmm. do this piece of work, do this piece. I mean, it's the same information over and over and over again. And it's very discouraging for the person or the family that might be in crisis or in a stressful situation. And if there was some sort of way where we could digitally connect, and once that family is in a system of care, be it through Community Elements or the Crisis Nursery or Developmental Services Center or any one of the other 35 different agencies that we work with, that would be a beautiful thing for those families. And I see Janice shaking her head and Benita, because it's very complicated. And sometimes we're also dealing with families who, you know, they struggle with the complexities of this. And that even builds more frustration. Last Friday, I was just speaking to the Project Read tutors from mm-hmm. Parkland College who work with adults who are trying to learn how to read. Okay, and you're that adult who's also low income and needs services, and everybody gives you a piece of paper and says, here, fill this out, and you can't read it. It's extremely frustrating for those families. And so if we could find a way that we can interact with them that way, you know, we want to make sure, too, that people have access to technology. And I think when Mike came to us and talked about big broadband, you know, one of my concerns was we have a lot of working families, and we were talking about getting children access to computers and things for schoolwork and that sort of thing. And Mike's like, who's going to monitor that, you know, to make sure that they're not going places that they shouldn't go? Because there are a lot of predators out there in cyber world, and so we want to be careful about that. And I think one of the big issues and up-and-coming things as we talk more globally here in the state of Illinois, no surprise that we don't have our act together. We're one of the few states in the country that don't have 211, which is information and referral. We have here locally first call for help, which is through the Family Service of Champaign County. And there's also one in Northern Champaign County at the Community Service Center. But to have a universal 211 information and referral service for the state of Illinois, I think there's maybe three states in the country. And like I said, it doesn't surprise me that the state of Illinois doesn't have INR, a 211 service. But again, that's a great use of technology and data to get people started on getting their needs being met. And we need to really, really push that. The legislation has passed, but now, of course, nobody's doing anything with it. Woohoo, we passed it, but now what? So, and I know United Ways across the state are really pushing for this because we feel that it's really important to families and individuals who are seeking information and need resources so they can take that first step into, you know, solving issues in their family or their household. It's critical that we can get 211 in the state of Illinois. It does take money, we get that, but I think United Ways are across the state are very much ready to support that. Another use of technology that we have, and we're working right now with computer science students at the University of Illinois, is access to, here locally we have a website, cuvolunteer.org. However, that's going to make a shift into the 21st century. We're really excited about this, and it's going to become cucares.org. And so we have been meeting with service providers and college students who are very, very smart, and programmers and designers of programs. How do we get to the community at large and encourage volunteerism? We're really lucky here in Champaign County. We do exceed national standards as far as the percent of time that people spend volunteering. I think this is a very caring community, very caring county. People reach out a lot. So CU Cares is going to be this newly designed website that will make it easier for everyone in Champaign County, not just students. CU Volunteer tended to be a great portal for students to access volunteer opportunities, but now what we really want is for something for the entire community so that, you know, people my age feel like that's a resource available to them, and seniors and youth and all those folks. And we're really excited about that. That should launch sometime early next year. So looking forward to that.
Well, thank you so very much, Sue Gray. That was really some real, all of you all have some real good information. I'm getting educated on the information myself because I didn't know some of that existed. So thank you all so very much. Right here to my right is now Mr. Will Cowles with Champaign City Council. Will.
How's everybody doing today? Good, good. I'm Will Cowles. I'm the City Council member for District 1. And I had a meeting with a local developer, and he said something that stuck with me. He said, you have to create the vision that you want to see tomorrow and then go for the ride. That stuck with me because I understand where the country's going, where the world's going, where the state's going, and ultimately where our city is going is the more use of technology. How many people in here, just a quick show of hands, have a cell phone? How many people in here have a BlackBerry or some internet way of internet connection? Or how many people text?
I just started.
My mom sent me a text. My mom's 57 years old, and she's texting me.
That's not old.
I love you, son.
Sure is. That's not old.
About crowd participation is awesome. But my mom never texts me. In fact, I think she texts me more than she calls me. But Channel 5 and 6, as we were going, Kevin and I we worked on a project with the 500 West Beardsley block. And we walked across a group of young men that some people would, and I'm just pretty real in my conversation, some people consider thuggish. And you know what the first thing he said? He said, I know you. I saw you on Channel 5. Yeah. That's an impact. So what I'm saying is that big broadband in the city of Champaign and Urbana can be successful. A lot of times there's this notion that people aren't using technology, but they are using technology. Low income, big income, young, old. I was at a conference and I know this lady. I mean, she was 50, 60 years young. I'm not going to get in trouble.
Okay.
And she had...
Not there yet, Will.
She had a palm trio. She was using technology, and that's something that's surprising. You know, when you, because you, that the thing is, the young people are using this technology. It's not just young people using this. There's old people using this. Young people using this.
You're right.
Seniors. That's the political way of saying it. Seniors. President Obama ran one of the largest campaigns, and he did it using the internet. I mean, he collected a lot of money. I don't have a figure, but he collected a lot of money just asking for $5 and $10 contributions over the internet. That is huge. That's big. Kiwan Carrington, when we had a visual, I don't remember seeing any flyers going out for this event. I don't remember hearing any Channel 5 and 6 announcements, but I can tell you that when we went to Pastor Nash's church, it had to be about 300 or 400 people in there. They were standing room only, flowing out. They were in the hallways. So what I'm saying is, technology is being used. Technology is important. The effective use of it is where we're trying to go. Day-to-day interactions and transactions. How many iPad? We don't want to sit at a computer station anymore. Now we want a notebook. Now we want to be able to, and I want one. I'm politicking, for one. We can go to the coffee shop, and now we can, you know, get on our computers or get on our laptops, and now we have free Wi-Fi. That's what they advertise, yeah. Free Wi-Fi. You know, I mean, these are things that we're using. It was pretty disturbing to me, but I saw a local gang use YouTube. They put their information on YouTube, and I'm thinking to myself, this is a really negative video. How could you do something like that? Is this a calling card to be stopped by the police? But then I thought about it even further. I said, this guy understands marketing. This guy, he left his email address at the end of the video. That's how I know. He left his email address, so he understands marketing. He understands communication. How can we turn negative into positive? You know, if people are using technology, by the way, I didn't mention in the Kiwan Carrington, all those people came by text. That's how the young people came, by text. And it's kind of hard to believe, but it's true. I asked, how did you get all these people here? We just text them. That's what people are doing. That's what Mrs. Benita was saying. People are using text. Websites. My favorite website in the whole wide world, other than the city of Champaigns, gotcha, is the MTD website. If you have a chance, you get on the MTD website. Even if you have a car, we understand, you know. But check out how they're interacting with the user. You know, if you want to get from, how do you get to the annex to the city building? You can map your route out on the MTD website. This is where we're going. My point is to say that all I'm trying to say is big broadband can be successful. I'll wrap it up with the newsletter. I started off with 57 contacts, 57 I email every week. Now I email, to God be the glory, 457. I mean, and over the next year, it probably will be 1,000. I have 800 Facebook friends in 2000, it's hard to believe you can meet 800 people, but in 6 months I'll have 2,000. That's the type of connections that we can use with technology. That's the power of technology. That's where we're going, and I think that's why big broadband can be very successful.
I want to thank you very much, Mr. Cowles, and really everybody on the panel. Such great information. We are going to have time for questions, but there's one more person just that came in. She's in the back. It's a librarian, and I would like you to. Well, that's okay. Give your name and.
Yeah, so I'm Carol Linsky, and co-worker John Gaynor, and I are. Can you raise your hand? Yeah, we're both from Urbana Free Library. I'll just say 2 minutes about public libraries and.
the vital role they're playing in access to technology. If you're only thinking of libraries as books, the times have changed, and they are not hush-hush quiet places now with just books in them. Computers and computer access is a vital part of what we're doing in the community. And every month, there are thousands of computer sessions used by people in our community. One thing about Urbana Free Library, you don't have to prove the residence, you don't have to have a library card, so if you're a homeless person or transient, living a transient lifestyle, you're still able to come in and get free unlimited access to the computer, which is vital. And we see people using it for all kinds of things, their pleasure and social needs, Facebook or watching things on YouTube. But it's also increasingly impossible to apply for all kinds of jobs in our community unless you're able to get on the computer. If you want to apply for a hospital, University of Illinois, you need to be able to get on the computer and have a long enough session that you can finish doing something before the cutoff or charge the long way to do it. In addition, I'll just say libraries are also able to afford to buy databases, so car all data, so you can come in and get information about fixing your car, consumer reports. If you need homework tutoring, we have access to free online tutoring sessions for kids, or learning languages. So libraries can use their resources to purchase databases and information that otherwise people wouldn't be able to afford. I'll also just say access to a high-speed computer is not enough. And we see many patrons who come to our library and use the computer who do have a computer. They do have a laptop or they do have computer access at home, but they don't have someone to help them when they get stuck and are unable to use it. So we have patrons who, as you mentioned, from United Way, who struggle with literacy issues, or they have disabilities which make it difficult for them to get to the computer quickly. And so they're relying on the help of staff at the library, and that's our job, is to make people step out of the shame or the discomfort or embarrassment of asking for help and let them know, no, that's exactly what we're here for. We're here to help you use that computer successfully. John Gaynor, my co-worker, has worked very closely with DISLIS. Can I go up and say something about this? Training student volunteers and also some community volunteers who are explicitly there at the library several hours a week, just there to sit down beside you and help you get your email or help you understand how you do a document or create an Excel file, because sometimes you need that half hour, 20 minutes of somebody sitting there patiently working through an issue with you. It's not enough to be handed a manual or a help card. Last thing I'll say is we do also have free wireless access in the library, and increasingly we see people who work from home or have their own business who come to the library because they want that public space, they want that environment, being around other people, getting a cup of coffee in the coffee shop, also having access to any resources in the library. So libraries, it's our job, it's our role and our mission to make computing accessible.
Well, I guess what I just say in my experience is that a lot of libraries and librarians forget that they're part of the continuum of public services. We often might feel like, you know, we're kind of an island unto ourselves. We have the answers if only people would show up. And I think this kind of symposium is a great opportunity, at least for me, to, you know, as a reminder that we do need to get out there. I think one of the speakers, participants yesterday said something near the end about, you know, if you're not where I am, you know, I don't trust you. And that really resonated with me. And I'm, after this symposium is done, you know, my intention is to go back and tell my colleagues and share that with them, that, you know, we need to be out there. We can't just sit and wait for people to show up, you know. We need to, you know, shape our services around the needs that people actually articulate to us. So, I really appreciate this opportunity, and like Carol said, we're really there to help. The DISLIS students have been instrumental in just providing bodies to sit down with people. That's the biggest thing that I see. It's not always just about getting information, but sort of initially overcoming any kind of hang-ups you might have about accepting help or asking for help. You know, we don't always have the friendliest faces of what we're working on that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yes, sir. Okay, I'm getting ready to get to that. Okay, now we have exactly 10 minutes for questions, and since this young man in the back said he had one first, you are now, and I'll go in order that I see you, so if you would stand, and then I would let you ask your specific question. So, yes, sir.
I take your point about who's not wanting to lose personal touch.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the same time, you heard budget cuts mean that we don't have the wet weather bodies specific. So what I'm wondering is, if we have a 100 meg symmetric in the local community that enables video to be crisp and immediate, like watching TV, what is the possibility in each of your cases, whether it's the neighborhood, whether it's legal services, whether it's social services, to maintain the personal touch virtually by adding video connection and streaming, whether it's asynchronous or synchronous, but to have that outreach, given the fact that in this area, everyone is going to have maximum opportunity to use the full capacity of UC to be in the local context. So I'm just wondering how each of you might envision using video to increase your service while decreasing your budget.
Can I jump in on this? I think it depends on what kind of issue may be that someone is dealing with. In John's case, maybe someone just needs a simple question answered about a process or a procedure about how to, you know, go forth and conquer in the legal system. Whereas with Benita or Janice or some of the other social service providers, sometimes those issues can be very emotional, and that you do need an actual person to be able to have contact with and be in touch with. But I think there are some like procedural things or where it's a matter of here's where you need to go, this is your first step in the process type thing, where, you know, an information referral service, you know, that might work very well. It's just a matter of being able to get someone pointed in the right direction and, you know, saying, wow, we're glad that you've contacted us, and here's some resources for you, and, you know, we'll get you headed in the right direction. But I think it just depends on what it is that someone needs information for, in my opinion.
And I'd like to add on to that. I agree. It depends on the procedure. As a city council member, I don't necessarily have an office. I just meet with a lot of people in different spaces. Skype. That is going to be the new thing. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine city council meetings or members just saying, hey, I got my iPad when I get it, probably taking for it, and just using Skype, you know, to talk and interface and connect with people for that personal touch.
And I just want to add on what Sue said, because I do deal with crisis specifically, I have to be looking at that individual. Crisis to us is suicidal and homicidal. Homicidal, they're going to harm someone. Suicide, they're going to harm themselves. We have to assess that person immediately. That in that place, it wouldn't work. But in collaborating services, yes, with that person, fine. Even with case management, fine. With our teen moms program, fine. With the roundhouse, with the teens, setting them up with different school systems, fine. Working with the schools, the hospitals, fine. But also you have to realize, and I just want to give this to you because that's what we're here for, we're under HIPAA. Mm-hmm. HIPAA says that we can't put certain information that the clients tell us, we can't put it out. And it's because of that we're restricted to some means. So other than that, yes, like I said, with Time Center, all of that, those needs, getting them connected in community, it's very well needed, and even working with the at-risk community.
Well, I could say about, in legal services, what would be less important is than the face-to-face would be able to transmit documents. The frustration I always have is that I'm talking to people on the phone, but I need to know what their documents say. And I know what to look for in the stack of documents. And even if their literacy is not a problem, they don't know what page is the important one. So, and then I got to get documents to them for them to sign and get back. And we lose lots of clients just in that exchange
there. In the document, that's true.
So it would be less important than the video, but to be able to transmit documents back and forth while I'm talking to them.
Yes, sir.
Sue, as far as a single point of entry for multiple service providers, that should be, that's something that's already readily available in the private industry. It's not a technology that's not being used right now. So if there is a grant that you guys have, for instance, for someone to write that program, I'm sure that I know someone who would be interested in applying for that. I don't think it would take too much. It's not possible pricing.
Well, and I think that's great, but Benita brings up a good point. The HIPAA regulations, everybody is a little timid about, you know, what we can share, and I think it's kind of a systematic change, too, as far as policies and, you know, what information can be shared through that single point of entry. But, yeah, I'm sure it exists out there. I have no doubt. I just wish that we could figure out a way to make it work for us.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And
but
then, as far as volunteers, I was thinking that there needs to be a channel from high school students who need community service hours to libraries that need volunteers to help people with basic information on computers, both the university and some just high school. So that we could have volunteers that are available there to help out the kids that know this kind of information.
Are there any, some more questions? Yes, ma'am. And then, did you have one too? Okay.
I just joined the group, so I'm not sure if this question has been answered or if this is the proper session.
Can't hear you.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure if this is the proper session or if this question has been asked already, so forgive me if I'm repeating something. Is there someone on the panel that can speak on behalf of the public library?
Libraries right here.
I had an issue last week. My printer was down. I'm a U of I undergrad, and I had a paper that needed to be turned in, and I couldn't get my printer to work. And so I went to the Douglas Library thinking it would be quicker than trying to navigate the traffic as well as parking and so forth on campus to use one of their facilities. And I go in and I ask them, you know, I just have a printer, a thing I need to print out real quick, is that possible? I was asked for my ID, of course I didn't have that on me, I was in a rush, and I was asked for, you know, well, do you have your library card? No, my library card has had $100 of fines on it since I was a child. And I was told that I could not use the computers unless I paid my library fines under $5. And that I could set up a payment plan and put $5 on it today. But other than that, there was nothing they could do for me. And so I was still there just stunned, like, well, I don't want to sit down and check my Facebook. I just want to print out a paper for class. And eventually, after about 15 minutes of basically just like saying, just, you know, can I just put my USB drive in your computer and just print it off? You know, I can't be late for this class. And I find it very frustrating that I'm probably not the only one that runs into an issue like this. Eventually, someone came out, they gave me a visitor code. I put it in, it took 3 minutes, and I was out of the door. But I'm wondering if somehow some of these policies aren't doing more harm than good, because my experience is not one that's going to necessarily prompt me to, with my next couple $100, go pay those fines. And I'm sure that's probably the goal, is to get some of these fines paid off. But in the meanwhile, I'm wondering if some of these, and this is just one particular instance, if some of these policies aren't shutting out some of the people that need this technology from being able to use them, And, you know, I'm one that will ask, well, are you sure? Well, is this, you know, where is it written that this is the policy? You know, I'm going to ask a bunch of times. You're going to have to tell me no like 30 times before I leave. Not in a disrespectful way, but I know how sometimes people will just give you the first answer and just to get you on. And is there anything that can be done to maybe restructure some of these policies that restrict access to the technology that should be publicly available?
You know, you're raising a really good question. And policies at different libraries vary. Our library has just shifted over to a set of computers that you just type your first and last name in, and you're on.
Yeah,
or so maybe you don't have proof of residence, maybe you're from out of town, maybe you have library clients. But our library policy, we decide, you know, our administration, our board decided that the access was more important. But it's part of I would say, and I'm speaking just for myself, not for the library here. I mean, I think there is a sort of battleground in libraries now. Are we a tax-supported service for the folks who are using their car and paying their taxes, or are we a community service to everyone, with a special mission for those who are in the most need or the most disadvantaged? And again, I'm speaking for myself here, but just to say, is it more that sort of corporate thought of like you need the support of your tax dollars and it's a very tight financial times right now and you need to demonstrate your patrons are using their cards responsibly, you need to prove they're in your tax district, or are you again this public good, this public service? And I think it's a battleground right now in libraries, and you'll see if you go to different libraries in the area, it'll be different policies, and then our library would have been a different experience. And I'm just saying that libraries are struggling with that issue in these financial problems.
Okay, thank you very much. I think this young man sitting next to Janice and this lady in the back. Okay, and could you give your name?
I want to speak to this too because it relates back to UC2B. If the thing about the manifesto, one of the things on there is cyber democracy and collective intelligence, which is one of the things that Kevin picked up. He's real clear that if the neighborhood can feed information into his system through his inspectors and through people calling in, then problems can get solved. Libraries are just an example of an agency that's under a tremendous amount of budget pressure, and they can make bad decisions, like around how to set fees, how many prints do you get for free, blah, 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 who gets to use the computers, and so on. They can be bad decisions if they don't have fullest community input. Mm. And if people are not online and are not maximizing, whether it's texting or Facebook or signing a petition online, then a decision can get made without the community input that makes it appropriate to the local community. So I really hope that all during the day we can talk about how to bring everybody into this system in a sustainable way, right? So the money is always there to keep everybody online to make it this thing we're talking about effective use. So that all the decisions we make, maybe it's something like printing of term paper, which we're talking about today, but it could be about something like a hospital book. Which
yes,
could be really life and death. I'm sure your paper was important. As a professor, I know how important deadlines are. But UC2B has to be serviceable in this way, or there's no use to it.
Okay. Did you still have something? Okay.
My name is Misty Bale. I think I'm an educator, but also I work in the private sector as well as here. Some of my background experience is marketing. So you're talking here about engagement. And I know there's a difference between the private sector and the public sector. I also work for the public sector as well here, which I'm an educator. But one of the things that I'm firmly a believer on is some type of strategic plan. Mm-hmm. And within that strategic plan, we need some type of marketing execution plan. And when we're talking about engaging people as a community, leader as well as a taxpayer here. We talk about all these programs and I have no idea about 3/4 of them to make available to my students, to make available to my parents. And we need a way that we can market ourselves as a community. And so my question here to each of the panelists is, what is your marketing plan? Because right now, I volunteer the majority. I'm laid off right now, so I volunteer 100% of my time within the community right now. And I work at the neighborhood, the Urbana Neighborhood Connection Center. And we're in the process of establishing a marketing plan where we market to our parents as well as we market it to our students so that we can take advantage of the technology that's available. So we have a parent center where the parents can come and get on the computer and check their student grades. I text with my students. I Facebook with my students. We've had a Facebook privacy class where the students from the graduate school of library and science came and did a Facebook privacy class. So we are marketing ourselves within the community, and I think that's an important part of this whole engaging aspect. And so my question to the panel is, you know, how are you marketing yourself within the community? I mean, I've never heard of the neighborhood services until today, to be completely honest.
Because it's Champaign.
And I live in Urbana, and I just asked Janice, do we even have one for that? You know,
yeah.
So I mean, that's my question. Yeah. I mean, do you have a marketing plan or some type of strategic plan that you are marketing yourself within the community? Because I think that's a very vital part in the private sector as well as the public sector. And I think Dr. Salos made an excellent comment yesterday talking about the university and how, yes, the university is public, but you know what? Some of the private donors are exceeding some of the public funds for, and they're you know, dictating what's going on. And so that's why we have to be, you know, very engaged and don't, you know, lay by the wayside what's going on here, because I think it's very vital to the community as well as to the university so that we can keep an established partnership.
Did you want
to? Yeah, I can address that somewhat. I think your comments are absolutely right on. And from a public engagement standpoint, education outreach is something that we need to be doing on a more regular basis to make ourselves continually relevant to the public in terms of what we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish. And it's not just about getting information out, but how you get it out strategically. Right. So from a neighborhood services standpoint, we are working on that very thing that you're talking about. And certainly our city organization is trying to do a better job of that overall, period. But there are things that people, and this is important for a lot of different reasons, because there are a lot of myths that are promoted about a particular service or business or enterprise if you don't have a strategic marketing plan in place.
Right.
Like, people associate code compliance or code enforcement as a negative thing, but really it's the philosophy is working with people to make sure we preserve our community, right? And so I agree with you. I probably can't spend a lot of time articulating some of the things we have on the table, but neighborsofchampaign.com, what I talked about in terms of developing this portal where neighbors can connect to each other within their neighborhood, and neighborhoods across the city can connect with other neighborhoods. There could be that interconnection between neighborhoods, and we can connect neighborhoods and neighbors to the broader community. That's what the site is going to be about. You'll see a lot more visibility with the Neighborhood Services Department and how we work with the community. We have tons of relationships with people who do know about us and are really effectively using the services. And so we can't even assume that we have all the ideas to solve all the problems. And so having a marketing plan and involving people, you can get a lot of stuff done and problems solved that will take you 10 years to solve. You probably solve in 2 weeks. Anyway, I think it's a great comment. I can't go into detail about what we're doing here, but now you know about us, and so you can contact me.
Okay.
Well, I think visibility, what he said, a simple example of that is our office moved from South Neal Street, 1817 South Neal Street, out in the boondocks, where we weren't connected to the community. Now we're in First Street. We are visible. I feel much better about where we are. We're more accessible. We're part of the neighborhood. Simple thing like that. But and how we become visible in other ways, I guess I'm a lawyer, not a strategist, but you're right. We can't just think, oh, if we just do good work, people will know us about us. We have to make a conscious effort to do it.
All right. I wanted to thank everyone. We're a little bit behind schedule, so we're going to take a 10-minute break. Before that, I just want to make two announcements. We have a manifesto at the back of the room. We're asking everyone to sign so we can get on the same page. I would also encourage all of you from social service agencies to continue this conversation at the Human Services Council, which meets at the extension the first Thursday of every month at 8:30 a.m. So let's continue this discussion at those meetings. Thank you.
There's coffee and tea and